Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber Podcast. My name is Tony Groves and today we're talking comedy, which is such relief. It's good to be getting back to a little bit of entertainment. Actually, you know what, I'm going to put this out there now. Yesterday I was speaking to Emmett Kirwan, the writer, actor, poet, and it was his birthday. So Emmett, happy birthday, because when you listen back to this now, the only thing I will say is I am older than you, but you look a lot older than me, thankfully. Speaking of people who look a lot older, Martin.
I'm really thankful that we have a real comedian on, Tony, because honest to God,
that
you
was
are
terrible.
The worst.
Yeah. I know.
The worst. I'm embarrassed for you, seriously.
That's unfair because my dad jokes go down quite well in certain demographics.
Yeah, your mom loves them. She loves them.
And your mom says they're good as well.
Yeah, so. Yeah she does. Yeah.
Look, we are terrible. But listen, it is great to be joined by Scottish comedian, writer, actor, Eleanor Morton. Eleanor, thank you so much for taking time to talk to us today.
Thank you for having me.
This was one of those viral online comedians that have sprung up over the course of the pandemic. And I want to, you know, go straight at it and say there was the piece you did about podcasters. And of course, it automatically made me cringe, die, and want to lie on the ground. Can I ask this? The ingenuity that goes into these online sketches, is this a new COVID thing, or is this something that you just always felt like, you know, would play well, but you have to put it to the 2:20 that you can get away with on Twitter?
Yeah, it was a sort of big mix of both, because you know, I think as comedians, you're always encouraged to kind of get online and do, you know, keep up with all the different things that are happening, like all the different new apps and all the Twitter's new, but all that stuff. And then when COVID came along, you know, there's no like gigs anymore, there's no sort of outlet for that. So I kind of set myself a goal of like doing a couple a week just to feel like I was making something, and also just doing them on the very, very specific things that I think are funny. And if anyone liked those, then that was just a bonus, really.
Yeah, I think I see you've just touched on where is there a difference though if you were, say, writing a sketch for a, whether it was going to be on stage or maybe a TV spot, or when you have to write specifically for a social media platform?
Oh yeah, there's I mean, a lot of TV nowadays is sort of like geared towards getting that market of social media, so like sometimes it's quite similar, but yeah, for generally for social media it has to be something very quick, obviously, like people's attention spans have gone right down, and then also it has to be something zeitgeisty or something that everyone can kind of tag themselves in and go, that's me. But I don't think I wasn't really as thinking about it as cynically as that, because I was sort of just having a bit of fun, because there was no pressure, you know. I wasn't feeling like I had to do anything. I was just like, I'm not doing anything else, so why not do it? And do, again, you know, not really think too much about like, is this incredibly, is this something that everyone could relate to, as opposed to, is this something actually quite niche that I think is funny? And sometimes other people do think it's funny, which is nice.
Did you know you had a hit, or was it you threw it into the ether and let's see what happens?
I felt like this was going to be one that a lot of people could relate to, just as I think, well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if you guys have been listening to more podcasts than before, but definitely everyone can relate to listening to podcasts, but also like it was something that had come up mostly, I have to say, on American podcasts I listen to.
Yeah.
That always seems to be a female producer. And so I just thought this was probably going to do better than like, for example, the ones I do about the history of Scottish religion, which I
quite enjoyed.
I mean, they have a market, but podcasts are a bit more universal.
Yeah, no, there's so many, how do I put this, stereotypes and tropes that you can make fun of, especially with a 2-minute window where you can be that guy. And we've seen the rise of several online comedians. Martin, 3.5 years ago, we did a podcast with Big Dirty Fry when he had 700 people following him on Twitter. And he's become this kind of, you know, he's on Spotify with his band now, you know, his band of him. But is there, when you do that sort of work and you have to condense it into that, do you think that there's a way of broadening that into something that actually pays the bills, I suppose? That's a really difficult thing, Rubicon, that needs to be crossed, you know? Yeah, the likes and retweets don't pay the bills.
No, it's true. And you can kind of, you know, you can put your Ko-fi coffee out there and say, if you like this, you know, bung us a couple of quid. But yeah, it's not. It's so hard to get, especially sketch comedy. I feel like, I don't know about in Ireland, but in Britain, I feel like it's really hard to get sketch comedy made. And it's almost like, you know, sketches on TV aren't going to be much longer than this anyway. So why not just put it online? Because you might as well do that instead of trying for years and years to get a sketch show made, because they're so expensive to film. And, you know, there's just so many different reasons why they're hard to get off the ground. So it is one of those things where you're like, well, I don't feel like I'm saving this for the moment where anyone calls me up and says, do you want a show? Because it's just pretty unlikely. So why not just do it? And you know, the good thing about like the short form stuff is that there's always more of it, and there's always something you can do. So yeah, it wouldn't need to change much, I think, to go to something like TV, apart from obviously the optics. That's another buzzword. You know, you could dress it up a bit more. I don't know if you guys know about Alistair Beckett King. He's another comedian who's pretty big on Twitter with, he does similar kind of viral videos, but his production values are like 200% higher than mine. He's really good at like graphics and film stuff. So he has these beautiful backgrounds and animations.
And music, I think.
I'm sort of like the budget version of him in a lot of ways.
It's amazing though that genre has become so, like, we've lived for these sketches, you know, that I was talking to Killian Sunderman, who's done these sketches, and sometimes, you know, now I know this is really bringing it back to Dublin. I'm going, I know that location, and I'm now invested in the character. It's 2 minutes, but I'm completely invested in this character. How it translates to say a sketch show, I don't know if that's actually where the argument's going to be when things come around, because I think there has to be a third way where these shows become almost online entertainment, and there has to be some sort of, whether it's paywalls or it's exclusive content. That would be my, you know, I don't know necessarily that there's going to be big investment. You're sitting in London. Economies of scale, at least you have there is a bigger market, you know, for that, but it's also hyper competitive. Are you looking at, when things come back around, like bookings, live shows and the likes?
Yeah, very very tentatively. It's because this sort of, after the first 6 months last year, there was a kind of opening up bit where everyone was kind of feeling out, you know, potential live stuff, and it did happen a bit. So it's kind of happening again where everyone's a bit cautious because a lot of that then got cancelled. So I don't know if you've heard, the Fringe seems to be going ahead, which I think is a bit mental. A lot of comedians are just like, no thank you. So yeah, at the moment I've not got I've got a couple of gigs in the works, but not like massively solid plans, because, you know, it's just like anything at the moment, you're just waiting for it to get cancelled, basically.
Is the pandemic situation and the cycle of lockdowns and open ups, is it giving you new material?
It's hard to say. I mean, I think a lot of, on the one hand, you've got this situation that's sort of very rarely universal, which is that we're all in this pandemic and everyone in the world has not got exactly the same situation, but, you know, we've all got something to relate to, and that's good for material. But then on the other hand, there's obviously going to be huge saturation in terms of everyone's got the same the same things happening to everyone, so you're going to get a lot of the same jokes out of that, and I imagine when the Fringe does come back to normal, there's just going to be a lot of COVID material. And I don't know if everyone is, I don't know about you guys, I feel a bit knackered from pandemic material, and some people love it, you know, some people are really enjoying like watching gloomy shows about that kind of thing at the moment. My parents were watching Chernobyl at one point, and it's not quite the same, but I was like, God, that's bleak. What are you, watch something nice, you know? So it really depends if people are sick of hearing about it or not, I guess.
I think I shared that. I don't think many people are going to want to have the feedback on terms of, you know, let's all laugh and joke, because we haven't even gone through it. I take a sketch like you doing the Scottish tour guide, for example. That's much more likely to play than because it's something, even though it's alien to us now, the idea of a tour guide, we can all associate with it. excuse me. Can I ask one thing though? Do you think, and it's do you believe that the growth in online, like you touched on it earlier when you said you have an idea, you write it, you put it out, no hanging back. Do you think that is going to stop when things come back around, that people will start to pocket things and hang back a bit on the basis that there might be more, you know, opportunities to keep together your own stuff for something that might come off?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know, really. I think every comedian likes to think of themselves as an endless source of material. So even if you are picking stuff out there, you could always think of more. But certainly, I think a lot of people are going to be, a lot of people who've had to pivot to comedy, to online stuff, like myself, who was never really very good at it or very into it before, are going to enjoy going back to live stuff and just doing something completely different. I have honestly no idea. It's just so hard to predict.
Do you miss collaborating with others? Do you find that difficult?
Yeah, I think that's probably one of the biggest things I miss, because I do like a thing with a group called Weirdos, who are sort of a collective alternative comedians in London. And every year we put on a parody kind of pantomime for charity for Great Ormond Street. And that's just so much fun. I mean, obviously, we don't make any money from it, but we just have such a great time. It's so inventive. Adam Larter, who's the head of that, he writes these really stupid, silly scripts. And it's all just, it's, you know, there's nothing more fun than everyone getting together and rehearsing. I think that's, you know, some comedians seem to be really missing the kind of gigging lifestyle. But I can't say I miss, you know, the 2 a.m. trains or any of that stuff. I just, miss other people, I think, is the big thing. And just being in the same space as people. I'm sure you guys feel the same.
I heard David O'Doherty speak about it recently, saying that he actually misses part of the, you know, the weird sensation of finishing a gig and maybe staying in an Airbnb somewhere. And, you know, the journey back, having met other comics of the night, and this kind of that atmosphere and that buzz. We miss live shows. We had live shows booked all the way through
2020,
and oh wow,
it all just went away, and that was fine, you know, it all went away. But at the time, we didn't realize how much we were going to miss it, if that makes sense. So but it does bring me, like, I'm interested. You say you have kind of you have that that group. Do you do any improv, or is it mostly scripted?
I've not with Weirdos. I also do a thing called Comedian Cinema Club with some of the same people, which was actually one of the last gigs I did before lockdown, which is where we kind of semi-improvise a film, like a, you know, we kind of improvise through a popular film. And so that's kind of half improvised. Obviously, the plot is there. And I have done quite a lot in the past. I did a lot of youth theatre when I was younger. And I think the thing about youth theatre is it's much easier just to make everyone improvise for an hour and a half than find other activities for us to do. So, a lot of that's kind of stuff and one-off gigs like that, where you just, especially during the Fringe, you know, there's always room for some fun weird thing where everyone improvises. But
Is that how you got into comedy, through youth theatre?
Yeah, I always wanted to do acting. And I think the older I got, the more, first of all, like, I was also wanted to write. And the more I kind of saw I think acting is great and I really admire actors, but I think I don't enjoy that. I think there's a lack of control there that I think people who are comedians really enjoy, which is, you know, you write your own stuff. It's all up to you. It's all on you, which is quite scary. But then the payoff is that, you know, you get all the payoff as well. So, I got into it when I was sort of 11 or 12. The idea of doing comedy sort of became a thing in my head. And then, and then it was another like sort of 6 years of bracing myself for doing that, because that's the kind of thing. It's one of those things that, you know, anytime you say it to anyone, someone goes, oh my God, I can't imagine doing that. And it's
Were you a serious person about comedy, or were you the funny person in the class?
Well, I wouldn't say I was the funny, but I think I was a bit too weird and easy to pick on to be the funny one in the class. I think I was the funny one in my group of friends, but I think I was that person in the class who would try and make a joke and no one would really understand what was happening. So that was what I was. But yeah, I was definitely always very, I wasn't like a comedy, you know, researcher. I was a kind of, I just like making people laugh, and a lot of people do, because it's a nice way of connecting with people.
It's interesting. One of the themes though that you've said has come up before. We had spoke to Tig Hickey, who has had some huge viral videos where he does kind of comedic history lessons. You know, he had one, and I think it had over 2 million views, Martin, or something insane like that. It was basically British imperialism, but it's a house share in Cork. You know, so it's this, you know, these lads each playing a different part. But when we spoke to Tig, he was talking about the difference he found, that when he said, I'm actually a comedian, that when it came to the arts, it was like, oh, that's not really the arts, is it? It was, you know, it wasn't taught as well as highly as acting or as other pursuits that are deemed to be within the arts. Have you found that as well?
Yeah, I think if you talk to any comedian, the first thing that comes up is funding. It's very hard to get the same kind of arts funding for comedy, and you've really got to justify some kind of important social message. And there's really a lack of understanding of the value of comedy simply as a way of making people laugh, if that makes sense. You know, so yeah, definitely, like, there's a lot of things to do with, you know, it gets complicated, like unions, things like that as well. You know, what constitutes what is comedy, because it doesn't quite fit in any area, and it also covers a lot of different areas. And I think people are always kind of impressed by that people see it as this impossible task, but I also think there is a thing of kind of that doesn't deserve the same.
There's a gap there for comedy through the medium of opera singing. That kind of hits all, that would hit all the funding buttons, I think. Yeah. Something like that.
High art. And I mean, I kind of think sometimes, I mean, opera can be funny. It's meant, apparently some of it's meant to be anyway. I've not seen enough.
Martin used to sing a little bit of it, didn't you, Martin?
Oh, I used to sing when I was younger, Tony. Yes, I did.
You can hear opera. He has
not opera.
Go on, what did you sing?
Choral stuff.
Oh yeah,
Latin stuff. I still remember words. Don't know what they mean, but I do remember the words.
I was in choir. We did a lot of choral, lots of big kind of choral pieces. Yeah, lots of phrases that you hear again and again, and you don't really know what they mean. But.
Yeah, yeah. But I suppose it gives you a grounding to stand in front of people and do your thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I started by doing musical comedy, and I still do it. I enjoy it, but I've moved away from doing just that. But it was interesting because I found I was much more nervous singing as a comedian than I was singing seriously, which was really weird. But you get used to it, you know.
You have actually. That's twice now. Sorry, Martin. That's twice. You've pointed at you've made fun of your own accent publicly quite a bit, because it has that, you know, it's, you put on the strong Scottish accent when you're in character and some of the characters, but then you can, like, people listen to you in a way. Do you find that accents are I suppose, went for a better term, being lost?
In comedy or just generally?
Just generally, I suppose. But I in comedy, it certainly seems to be that I like some of the people we know that are in comedy, they're almost depending on the work, sometimes they digitize their voices.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm sort of in a unique position where I don't really sound like I don't really have the accent of my where I'm from, and that kind of identity complex, I think it probably plays a lot into why I, you know, am a comedian. But I always have this thing where I feel like I need to live up to a sort of expectation of what being Scottish means, and I feel like I never quite fulfill it because I'm immediately not I don't sound what people like how people expect when people think of Scotland. But then that also sort of plays into this idea that for a lot of people who are from Scotland, Glasgow is kind of the only thing they really know, the Glasgow accent and the Glasgow culture, and there's just this whole other country which has lots of nuances, and you know, there's a whole class structure, there's all sorts of different things that make Scotland, and that's the kind of nitpicky I build a lot of comedy on.
That's very true.
Where do you prefer to be? There's the big question, London or Scotland?
It's not that hard. I think Scotland, to be honest. The problem is that London's where, you know, you can't get around the amount of opportunities in London, and I definitely enjoy living here. But I don't know how much you guys have been to Edinburgh, but I think I'm one of those. Yeah, I never grew up. There's a lot of comedians talk about growing up somewhere quite rubbish and how that was quite hilarious and that affected them. And I grew up somewhere really nice, and I never really wanted to leave it because it didn't, you know, it was very fulfilling. It was nice to look at. It had a big arts festival every year. It had ticked a lot of boxes, and I never really had that thing where I felt like I had to leave it to go and do something. So, I'd love to be back there now. There is stuff. I mean, I don't want to downplay the amount of comedy there is in Edinburgh, but and in Scotland. But if you want to do so, you know, if you want all the options, London has always been the place to be, which is a shame because, you know, I'm hoping that because of the pandemic, maybe we can start thinking that London doesn't need to be the centre of the universe anymore. But
it is for Irish comedians too, you know. It is too. So, you know, we understand from this side the draw of London.
We know loads of Irish comedians who only met one another when they arrived in London. That's the reality. It's like, where did you must have grown up on the scene together? No, only met them when we were working in London. Is that? I'm sure you have some sort of similar when you talk about the troops that you work with the gangs you work with. You fall in with these people. This is your that becomes your tribe then, surely.
Yeah, there's a lot of people I've met down here because I think I'm always worried I'll get in trouble with Scotland for saying this, but it's not true. It's not completely true, but there is less of alternative comedy. Just because there's less people, you know, it's a much smaller population, so there's going to be less of everything. And that's why I came down here, was to do more of the kind of thing I like doing. And it is very exciting when you meet people and you're like, oh, lots of different people like doing this. But I also know a lot of Scottish people, comedians who are in London for the same reason. And it's kind of like, oh, we could all move back up and keep doing that here, there, but it doesn't really work like that.
No, you could try Manchester. There's always the studios.
Yeah,
it's a
middle ground thing. Yeah.
And the rent is a lot more affordable. I anticipate. Like, London is not a cheap place to live in, and we say that from Dublin, which is, I think, they announced what was the fourth most expensive.
Yeah, fourth most expensive. And we're working on being the most expensive.
Yeah, no, we're Dublin
keep trying.
is there anything like? Just one last thing, I suppose. The process, is it just simply inspiration hits you and say, oh, I could have that. I already see that character in my eye. You know, you could read a tweet, you could see something, or you're watching a video and some fella and you're going, actually, there's a stereotype I can do, or there's a character I can jump on. What's the process like?
Yeah, I mean, I would say it wasn't really a process as much as just, it's trying to remember. When you think of something, it's just trying to remember it so that you can do it later and writing down. Obviously, I really love history, and I feel like there's a lot of it comes from things I wish I could sort of explain to people, but I would never bring up in a conversation because I know that they would be bored. But with the magic of the internet, I can just record myself doing it as a sketch, and then people don't have a choice. So yeah, it's just kind of things that or also, you know, things I couldn't really talk about in stand-up, that it might be harder to talk about in that framing. But yeah, it's really just my random thoughts and all the different things that I kind of wish I could complain about to people at length and have held back on, I think.
Last thing from me, would you have a tip for a really bad comedian, aspiring comedian like Tony, just to make themselves funny? Just one tip to make them funny.
Well, I think you've got to trust in your own sense of humor and not think too much about, you know, is this going to universally appeal? You've got to think.
Oh, he's bugged it, Ben. He's bugged
it. If I find it funny, then one other person might find it funny, and that's almost worth it in a way.
I think that's an unfair dig. There are I happen to like the fact that I'm deeply unfunny. I think there's no harm in that. Once you know you're unfunny, but you're there for your own, you're like, I'm not here to impress you, Martin. That's the end of that, you know. Eleanor, have you anything coming up, or where can people find you?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at Eleanor Morton, and I try and put a couple of short sketches a week, generally either about, you know, history or comedy or Scotland. And I do an intermittent podcast called All Rather Mysterious with John Rain and David Reed at Big Owl Podcasts, and we sort of, you know, solve mysteries, quote unquote. And that is sporadic, because it very much depends. They both got children. I don't know if you've heard of those, but they're very hard to fit around a schedule, especially during a pandemic. So we do record, but it's hard to say when. But we have a back catalogue on all the normal podcast channels.
Very good. I must check that out now. We do devour a lot of podcasts, as you'd imagine. It's been a pleasure to talk to you, and we are wishing you all the best as you go on. And we would love to see you live at some stage when things come around. You know, Dublin is it's an expensive town, but we love to go out, and we do love to party. So it'll be nice to see you in the flesh, as they say.
Yeah. Well, this is shameful, but I've never been, so.
Yeah. Well, that is shame.
We will fix that. You have an in now. That's the end of that, you know.
There you go. Done.
Just arrive at the airport going, I know Tony and Martin. And from there, they'll take it from there.
Yeah. Straight to the exit.
two weeks in a hotel. Thanks, Eleanor.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
Listen, folks, mind yourselves. We will be back with you, back in your feeds very soon. We've a lot coming at you. But do me a favor, will you, if you are listening, recommend us to other people. That's all I'm asking. Just give us a shout out to other people. That's you know where to find us, tortoiseshack.ie. Talk to you all soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Tony and Martin, Martin and Tony, speaking to interesting people only. It's the Podcast. Subscribe now on Patreon.